Have you ever longed to escape reality? Or fantasized about stepping into someone else's shoes, even for just a little while? Hi, I'm Laura Mullen.
And I'm Chris Tolley. We host CBC's Play Me, the immersive podcast that transforms theater into addictive audio fiction. Join us for a new season and disappear into a world rich with drama, where every show delivers hypnotizing stories and unveils intriguing characters with secrets.
Play Me, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. For families who care for aging parents, it is a familiar scenario. After a fall or illness, the parent is in hospital. They may need long-term care. The wait lists for long-term care are long, and finding the appropriate care home can take time. In the meantime, hospitals are already stressed and over capacity. Ontario introduced what it sees as a solution to this. It's called Bill 7, and it enables hospitals to charge patients $400 a day if they refuse to move into a long-term care bed chosen on their behalf. Tamara Moyer's father-in-law is among the first patients who received a bill for $5,200. Tamara, good morning.
Good morning, Matt.
Just briefly tell us how your father-in-law ended up in hospital.
He had aspirated pneumonia. He was in the hospital for about a month and went on high flow oxygen and the whole bit, and then went back to his assisted living care and only was there 30 hours and then back in the hospital with the pneumonia again. Mm. So he spent all of February and most of March of last year in the hospital. And he had a fall when he was in the hospital too.
Oh my goodness. That's a lot. Yep. And he's in his 90s.
He's 93. Uh-huh. Yes. Yep.
As you're going through this and as he's beginning to recover, you realize that long-term care is going to be something that he's going to need. And the process, I guess, is that you fill out an application for long-term care and put down a number of homes that you think would be appropriate.
That's correct. Yes. When he was in the hospital, he went to complex continuing care, and we thought he was, you know, in the place he needed to be to recover. And no one actually at the time came to us to suggest long-term care, but we knew he couldn't go back to his assisted living.
Right.
So that's when we approached them and said, you know, should we be filling out forms or what's the process? And that's when we found out all about it.
And so, having filled out those forms, what happened then in terms of where a space was offered up, a space was created for him in long-term care?
When we filled out the application, that's to determine that you're eligible for long-term care. And then they send a letter back saying that you are eligible. But on the forms itself, you have, there's quite a few choices on there you can make. With us, they were all local, like mostly in Chatham and around the area. And you're supposed to choose at least three. And so we chose our you know, preference. And then 2 days later, after it went in, that's when we got the notice that a bed was available.
And where was that bed?
It was in Wallaceburg, and it wasn't one of the ones we chose.
How far is Wallaceburg away from Chatham?
Oh, 10 to 15 kilometers.
Okay. Yeah. And why did you say that that was not an appropriate place for your father-in-law to go?
Well, we didn't know anything about it, about the place. The siblings that were involved for locality, Chatham was the best because some were in Windsor and Blenheim. Mm-hmm. So it was just, and as we knew about the residents that he had chosen, we were quite familiar with it.
So you wanted a place that was familiar, but also was close to family members.
Yes. Yes,
and
correct.
And so not getting that, you decided that he would not take that spot?
Correct. Three of the four siblings were out of the country at the time, being March, and usually people are away in March. And we were not given any, you have to make a decision in 24 hours whether you're going to accept or decline the bed. And we were not given any leeway on that. So, yeah, a decision had to be made pretty quickly.
So you said no. At what point in time did you get a bill for your father-in-law's stay in the hospital? How much longer was he there for? And then when did the bill arrive?
We said no on the 15th of March. And he was basically discharged on the 16th of March, or maybe that's the day we declined it. And we knew in the process that we had reached out to the long-term care that we had chosen, or he had chosen, and they had relayed to us that they anticipated an opening, but they were under a COVID lockdown, so nothing could happen. So anyways, within a few days after declining the Wallaceburg, we found out that he was accepted at the one that he his choosing. And he was we accepted that offer, and he was discharged on March 29th. And we didn't get the bill until April 6th.
What was the $5,200 bill for?
It was for, it says, uninsured hospital stay of $13, or 13 days at $400 a day.
What was your reaction when you got a $5,200 bill for the hospital stay?
Well, at first we couldn't believe it because we'd heard all along that no bills had been issued. But, you know, in fact, they could have been, and just nobody knew about it or recorded it. So, yeah, we were shocked when we got it.
Did you pay it?
We did pay it. We had a couple conversations with the Chatham-Kent Health Alliance questioning it, and that we would just get the runaround, get it passed off. You'd have to phone, you know, records, and it just got thrown around. So we finally just said, you know what, we're just going to pay it and be done. We didn't have the time to spend at that time.
Do you understand why the system is operating in the way it does when there's a shortage of hospital beds, and they're trying to figure out how to move people from perhaps an emergency department or somewhere else in the hospital into a bed, and they're trying to figure out where the person in the bed can end up? Do you understand why they would look to try to expedite that process?
I can understand their thoughts. But it's just the whole way it's initiated is not conducive to the situation you're in at the time. And some people, it might work for them if, you know, they're not aware of another bed being available than the ones that they've chosen. But they still should have the option of, you know, accepting it or not, and not being pressured into it and bullied and then threatened with a charge.
What's the better way to do it, do you think?
I think they need to, they need to focus more on the long-term care situation and get it freed up so that they can accept more people. And that's just a rough idea.
How's your father-in-law doing now?
He's doing great.
That's great.
From day one that he moved in where he wanted to be, he's been doing great.
And that's where he is. He's in the long-term care home that he really wanted to go to and that the family wanted him in.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to talk to you about this. This is a story that we're going to hear more about in terms of how it's playing out across the country. But Tamara, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
Tamara Moyer is in Chatham-Kent, Ontario. Jane Matus is the staff lawyer and institutional advocate for the Advocacy Centre for the Elderly. That centre has launched a legal challenge against this Ontario bill. Jane, good morning to you.
Good morning, Matt.
What do you make of what happened to Tamara's family?
Well, this is the first time I'm hearing the actual story, and I'm really wondering whether they actually followed the process even under Bill 7. But, you know, this type of bullying and pressure tactics and what Bill 7 has done is really not, you know, conducive to anyone's proper placement in a home where they will probably spend the rest of their life.
And so the basis of your legal challenge is what?
So the basis of the legal challenge is that they have removed the ability to consent, to have informed consent to the choices and the admission to a long-term care home, and that is contravenes the charter.
Is it about the consent, or is it, I mean, a lot of the attention, obviously, is in this story and others, is being paid to the bill and the billing practice, the fact that people are getting, you know, a $5,200 bill for what they're saying is uninsured hospital stay. How does that factor into it?
So, I mean, that factors into it a little bit, but really it is that consent process, because what happened in the past was that you got to choose your homes. If you turned down one of the homes that you personally had chosen, then yes, the hospital is entitled to charge us a rate because you're not, you know, you've had a legitimate place to go and you've chosen not to do that. What we're challenging is the fact that they are forcing you to go into homes that you are not consenting to, that you don't want to go to. And it's really that consent process that is contrary to the Charter.
How is that protected under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms?
Well, you know, you have a right to security of the person, for one thing. I think it's discriminatory against people with respect to their age. You know, this is something where we have, you know, as is very clear, is that there is a problem in the long-term care system and the hospital system in Ontario. And instead of fixing the system, they just take it out on seniors. And this happens over and over again.
Right. Is this about also about, and we heard this from Tamara and talking about that, about the distance that the long-term care home that the senior would be placed in terms of that distance from family and the type of care that they would get. Does that factor into this at all?
So there's a whole bunch of things that factor into this. Certainly distance from family is definitely one of the highest issues. We heard from Tamara that that he's doing really well in that home and that he's, you know, seems to be blossoming and doing extremely well. If he had been sent far away where family couldn't be there, he may have become depressed because family can't come over and visit. If there are problems, family can't pop by and see them. So that is certainly one part of it. Mm. The other part is that people are being put into homes that for a variety of different reasons, they don't feel are appropriate for them. And frankly, the government hasn't done enough to ensure that the homes that are out there are meeting the standards. And so a lot of the homes that have the empty beds or that have the available shortlist beds are homes that people, you know, frankly, don't want to go to. And that's a huge problem.
So we asked to speak with Sylvia Jones, the Minister of Health in the province of Ontario. She, her office said, wasn't available. The office sent a statement. It reads in part, Bill 7 ensures Ontarians can receive the care they need in a setting that is right for them. Bill 7 frees up hospital beds so that people waiting for surgeries can get them sooner. It eases pressure on crowded emergency departments by admitting patients sooner and connects more people to the care they need when they need it. Is that wrong? I mean, people are waiting, we know, in hallways for beds. Surgeries are being delayed because patients can't get into hospital beds. Is that wrong to say?
I think it is, actually. And I don't know that they have the statistics to prove that, because what has happened is that, you know, prior to COVID, people who were waiting in hospital waited in the general category. They were not crisis placements. The system now is that all hospital patients are crisis, and they're being forced into homes they don't want to go to. And what is happening is that people in the community are now not being placed into long-term care. So frankly, we don't have enough home care in the community. We don't have enough support in the community. And people are now using the hospital as a conduit to get to long-term care. So it hasn't, in fact, it has increased the problem.
But if we don't have enough beds in hospital, and there are spaces that are elsewhere that perhaps may not be optimal, may not be as close as we would like, but there are spaces that are available, and moving somebody, and again, we're not moving things, we're moving people. If you're moving somebody out of that bed to free up the bed, what else do you do if there aren't the beds available? And building more long-term care can be one answer, but that's a long-term solution. What do you do now?
Well, I think what you need to do is you need to, you know, home care would be one solution, is to ensure that we have enough home care in the community to prevent people from going in the hospital. You know, work with people. I think that one of the things is this is, you know, is using a very, you know, a big stick on a problem.
That you'll be charged. We're going to give you a bill if you don't leave.
If you don't do what we say, we're going to give you a bill. And, you know, I've been doing this for a very, very long time, and this is not a new issue. And hospitals trying to pressure people to leave is not a new issue. And generally, you know, people have always been fairly good at, you know, looking at the situation and saying, you know, I need to look at some other homes because hospitals aren't great. You know, that's a whole other discussion of, you know, the quality of care for seniors in hospital while they're waiting. But, you know, they've been pretty good about looking at other options. I think that there are other ways that long-term care can be given in different settings. Right now, we're having people put into alternate settings that don't meet the criteria for long-term care, and people are being enforced into those. I think there's other things that could be done, but just forcing people into places they don't want to go, it's going to shorten their lives, and that's the truth of it.
Jane, good to talk to you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt.
Jane Matus is staff lawyer and institutional advocate for the Advocacy Center for the Elderly. She was in Oshawa, Ontario.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share two hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not just Ontario that can charge for hospital stays while people are waiting for long-term care. British Columbia, Alberta, Nova Scotia, and PEI all have their own models of this. Andre Picard is the health columnist for the Globe and Mail, author of the book Neglected No More, The Urgent Need to Improve the Lives of Canada's Elders in the Wake of the Pandemic. Andre, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Can you understand, in a time of hallway healthcare, where people are waiting in hallways and dining rooms and cloakrooms and everywhere in between for a hospital bed, why a province would say, we need to free up beds and we're going to give you a bill if you don't leave the bed into a long-term care space?
Yeah, it's very understandable. You know, this story is really like this complex maelstrom of overlapping, conflicting issues. We, you know, how do you allocate scarce resources? What are the limits of choice? What do you pay for in Canadian healthcare? There's a lot of issues here that it's just sort of a microcosm of the complexities of elder care and how we're just not ready for the aging population.
Do we have a sense as to how many people in Canada are staying in hospitals waiting for long-term care?
Yeah, we have this term ALC, alternate level of care. It's kind of an Orwellian term because there is no care. You just live in a hospital. The latest figures I saw, about 7,500 people Canada-wide. So several hospitals full of people who have been discharged from hospital and they're living there and they're paying various amounts of fees depending on where they are, their condition, et cetera.
And they are in those hospitals. I mean, again, the idea is that there aren't long-term care spaces, but flesh that out a little bit for me more. Why are they in hospital and not moving on to another level of care?
Essentially because there's no place for them to go. There's not enough appropriate long-term care spaces. There's not enough home care. They're not well enough to go home. So they're kind of in this limbo. I met a person in Nova Scotia who had lived in a hospital for 10 years, had a fairly complex case. But imagine living in a hospital for 10 years. There's nothing to do. You just kind of lie in your bed, and at least in a long-term care home. There's programming. People come in and out. It's not a nice life.
I was going to say, do we know what the cost of that is on individuals? Again, we're not warehousing people or things. These are individuals who are trying to live their lives and get healthier, live as to the full extent as possible. When they aren't able to do that, when they're in a hospital where you don't want to be in the first place, what's the cost of that, do we think?
Yeah, it takes a terrible mental and physical toll. A lot of them, I'd say the majority are people living with dementia. So they have issues. They may not necessarily know where they are, et cetera, but it's harder for family to visit. As I said, there's no programming, no one to take care of you. The nurses, the long-term, the aides do yeoman's work to try and take care of them, but that's not their job. So it's an impossible situation.
What has happened with long-term care in the wake of the pandemic? We, people, and you and I have talked about this. There was this idea that there was going to be a reckoning in terms of long-term care. Where are we at in terms of creating more spaces so that people can get the care that they need when they need it?
There's been a lot of announcements that new spaces are coming. Ontario has announced a whole bunch of beds, for example, but it takes a while to build them. But there hasn't been the fundamental change. There hasn't been a huge investment in home care. There hasn't been a response to what the public wants, which is smaller home-like facilities, home care, keeping people in the community. So it's sort of, unfortunately, it's more of the same, despite this. What happened during COVID was really a massacre of neglect in these homes. We're still just sending people to homes. And then there's the commercial side of it. A lot of homes are closing because these are essentially real estate companies. Mm. They make their money off rent and they can make more money doing other things because long-term care is a lot of grief. So the pressure is coming from both sides, growing wait lists, a smaller number of spaces, more pressure to get people out of hospital. It's a pretty dire situation in long-term care.
So I guess in the last minute that we have, what do we do about this? If this is an issue of scarce resources, there aren't enough hospital beds, there aren't enough long-term care beds, there are people who are trying to find spaces in between, what do we do?
Well, I think you rebuild the system and you try and do it in the most coherent fashion possible. Look to other countries that do it well. Put all of your resources into keeping people at home as long as possible. And that's what's going to free up hospital spaces. That's what's going to ensure that the people who really need to be in long-term care are there. And it's going to avoid tragic cases like this where people are paying exorbitant fees to be in a hospital. They don't have a choice about where they want to go. I think the emphasis really has to go on to giving quality life back to our elders.
Are you expecting that more people will get a bill like that, though?
I think it's inevitable. You know, there are bills, people don't realize this had happened, but these ones seem particularly punitive. We're talking $12,000 a month to live in a hospital. That's quite outrageous.
Andre, good to talk to you as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Andre Picard, the Globe and Mail's health columnist and the author of Neglected No More. Your thoughts on this would be welcome. Have you gone through something like this with a friend or family member, perhaps been moved into long-term care that is not on the choice list for you, or received the bill because you haven't been moved into long-term care? Email us, thecurrent@cbc.ca.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.